Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in Chapter 2 of Mother Teresa's CEO, Loving This with the Cafe Book Club. Go ahead and get our lovely co-host, Miss Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm excited to deal with the devils, baby. And I brought my favorite devil with me, Major Rocky Bryant.
Hello, everybody.
She's in the trenches. Here we go. Yeah, you're in the trenches. It's all good. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite angel. There she is. Alana's coming in. Yep. There's my favorite angel.
Alana, how are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you. Having a great night. Yeah. Enjoying my day.
Good. That's awesome. That's
glad
awesome.
To be with you.
Not a lot.
Yeah, we've been together
angels,
in a while.
Not a lot of devils today.
Yeah, a lot of angels today. Yeah,
good.
Woo, for sure.
Woohoo! Yeah, that's very, very good. So today we're doing chapter two. Well, actually, it's the principle number two. It's not really the chapter number two. And it's called To Get to the Angels, Deal with the Devils. And I really thought this was going to be a great conversation because what we're really looking at is just looking at a lot of ethical challenges and just what happens with everything. So right off the bat, I'd love to read what they have on here for a quote from Mother Teresa. It says, if you are humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. And I think that's something that's really clear about just one of the keys with this is really being clear about, you know, what's your bottom line and, having it where, I just won't, that's something, I won't cross that line and that's just not something I'm going to do. So how about you, Wayne?
Well, what I'd like to toss around the table and have everybody chew on it a minute. When she says humble, what do you, in this context, how do you see that? So if you're humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. For me, that's really being true to myself, true to my calling, and being focused on that, not praise or criticism. I might certainly listen to feedback, but not get caught up in it, try not to take it personally. How about you, Ross?
Yeah, I think if you try to lead without ego and you're a selfless servant, you're going to be humble. And, your job in a leadership role is to provide vision and values, which is the ethics piece. Mm-hmm. Anyone can lead and say, do this, do that. But if you're trying to lead ethically and humbly, that's what people are going to inspire to follow you and be part of your team and all that. So,
Well said. Alana.
So how about you? Yeah, Alana, how about you?
Well, I was thinking about how, it does say you do have to, really put your ego aside. You get challenged many times. As a leader, it doesn't come without, someone else knowing, ultimately thinking they know better or maybe other ideas are bringing about to the table that are perfectly great and you didn't think of them, And so, being humble enough to recognize that you're not the expert in everything and that does take this team, perspective. I think that's key in being a good leader and, letting serving your people. That's why servant leadership is kind of where I live and breathe, and so mm-hmm. I think that is we're here to serve people. We're not here to we're here to help them make the big decisions. We all obviously have a large responsibility, but part of that is inspiring others and lifting them up in as well. So I don't think that you can do that with a bunch of ego in the way. So.
Well, and really good points, and also with that mentoring of what is ethical behavior, especially when mm-hmm. we're walking that tightrope sometimes. And how about you, Robin?
Well, I really kind of want to tag on to what Elena was saying about when you're making those leadership decisions. Because if you're making a decision, you know, it isn't basically you in a bubble. It's looking at all the different things that are being impacted by, you know, whatever your vision or dream is and the other people that have, you know, chosen to be a part of that. So one of the examples that they have right, you know, at the beginning of the chapter was a story about imagine a business that had been in your family for 50 years and is days away from running out of cash. It's like you have 300 employees and their families relying on their jobs to provide for them. Your uncle has served time in prison and embarrassed the family for years, but has offered to bail you out. You have no other alternative. What do you do? And I'm looking at that. It's a matter of, you know, is it a matter of my pride and my sense of things, or is it a matter of serving these people and having it being something that's bigger than me, if it makes sense on any level that can be a level to be secure and make sure other people are being taken care of. It made me think of COVID. Of how many people have been, you know, making these choices all year, you know, all last year about, you know, what is it going to take for me to be in a place of being able to help another? And am I willing to put myself on the line every day for a while just to make sure that those things, you know, the dots get connected? So those are some of the things I think that have to do with ethical and ethical values is a matter of like, you know, especially when you've got this huge thing that's way bigger than me, is impacting everybody. And having it being something that I think COVID's been a thing that really helped us to look at, because everybody really came from this place of, you know, everybody being comfortable with their own choices. You know, do I wear a mask? Do I get, you know, my shots? You know, how am I going to be connecting myself? And I think it's just, it really kind of shows a lot about where people are with being servants. Because that's one thing if, like, if I'm walking into a store and I see other people are wearing face masks and they've got to work and they're wearing a face mask, I'm going to put one on as respect. But the fact they're wearing them all day long. Yeah, they're wearing them all day long. The least I can do is wear one while I'm in their presence. So it just it shows a level of being bigger, and I think that's part of the humbleness, too, is realizing that, you know, people are making sacrifices and choices to be able to have things try to feel as normal as possible. But what does that look like when we've got this real, you know, different way of having things being moved in the world? So I think that's part
and
of the humbleness.
Who's the, angel and who's the devil can change in a heartbeat. You know, it's a matter of perception. And I want to come back to this example, you know, at the beginning here where it talks about, you know, the uncle who served time in prison embarrassed the family. Okay, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. We don't know what any of those details are. I think boundaries come into play. You know, you certainly, there's that you want to take care of the bigger family, and you need to look at what the particular details about this person are and boundaries about what happens if you do take the money and being clear about what you'll do in an ethical way. So I think those are, you know, parts of that puzzle, too. And I wanted to, you know, just a little further down from that, it says, you know, and I've worked with a lot of faith-based organizations and nonprofits. And I've seen a lot of things done in the name of faith, in the name of doing good works that I've really had a problem with, and I've had to walk away from organizations. And they say at the bottom of that first page, 28 in chapter 2, does the end justify the means? What is important in these situations is to understand what your goal is and then to recognize where do you draw the line. So I think that, you know, anything, Ross, you want to, that comes to you thinking about that?
Well, it reminds me that in life, making those decisions, you know, when you're training ethics to Army officers, it's always sort of like, oh, it's this black and white kind of decision. It's not. It's all shades of gray. Mm-hmm. And you have limited information when you have to make your decision. So you have to be able to also tell yourself, I'm going to make this decision based on the facts of today, but I also reserve the right to make an adjustment or a change as other things come to light. Like you could lean into this thing with the uncle with clear boundaries and parameters, and then you have facts about what does all that mean and whether or not you can do it or not. And you could even put it to the employees. And so, I mean, it's never these easy decisions, like always people who are critical of any president, I don't care what party, none of us are in the room that have to make those decisions when it's not
the data, the thing.
Yeah, when it's not black and white, and you have the classified data, and there are no easy answers. You know what I mean? And same thing with the ethics. And we used to tell cadets, you're going to make life and death decisions in combat, which is the extreme, but you're going to have to make ethical decisions in that environment, knowing that afterwards you're going to be judged by men and women in Congress, let's say, that never served. So they're not going to be the same kind of people that went through what you went through, but they're going to stand back and be in judgment of how you handled things. And so you have to live it. You have to live those ethics, and you're on parade every day. That doesn't mean you don't make a wrong decision, but you have to be able to do the best you can with ethics in mind, I guess.
I love what you're saying here, Ross, because it's, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about that, how, you know, the media that we have today, the politics, the political climate that we have today, and the, you know, just kind of this doctor nature of people, right? You know, digging things up that you might have posted 5 years ago or 10 years ago with information that you had then, you know, or a leader can't walk back a decision that they might have made and start making a new decision because they said something without all the facts, you know? It's like, you know, making campaign promises, right? I always think about that, like what's a campaign promise someone is making, and if they are actually able to, you know, keep that promise, they don't know. They're not privy to all the information that comes with the office, you know? And so I think it's that we as a people, as a society, should be a little more that we shouldn't be so hard and fast to judge, you know, on what decisions people are making, and that we should trust, have a measure of trust in leadership. And so, but I think that also goes back to, you know, proving yourself, you know, with the book it said, you know what your lines are, right, and stick to those lines. And so, you know, I think that's kind of where we're at. Like, we have to know what the leader's lines are, and then we expect them to stick to those lines as they make the decisions that they make.
Right. And you can't take today's values that are much more enlightened in any subject you might come up with compared to even when we were kids. Mm-hmm. You definitely can't go like 150 years ago and say, you know, oh, my God, you know, how come they did X, Y, and Z when it was a totally different value system, a different period, you know what I mean? And the other thing, too, is life is not 30-second sound bites for the news.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I agree with you.
And going, you know, into the book here, say you're talking about, you know, the devil. And, again, that devil can be changing left and right. That there were certain people, the ruler of Haiti, who had done some brutal treatment of the people of his country, and the fellow that was CEO of Savings and Loan that had taken advantage of people, and then that they had given money to Mother Teresa's cause. And she said, how could Mother Teresa possibly take money from these types of people? Wasn't it directly opposed to everything she and the missionaries of charity stood for? In her ethical scheme, they were devils, but she dealt with them anyway.
No, that's true. And, you know, the other thing, too, is when you have fellow leaders with you and you're trying to be an ethical leader, do the right thing, when someone says to you, and this happens a lot to me, hey, man, you're making me look bad.
Yeah.
That's when you say, yeah, you might want to look at that. Because if they're not leading the same way, they are going to look bad. And they know it. That doesn't mean that they might change their behavior, you know, so.
Right, or they try to get you to do the same thing,
right,
so that it makes what they're doing okay. And so you've got to be very, you know, mindful of that. And when you do things, sometimes I was talking to a good friend this morning who brought to light some really serious stuff that is now being changed and in a big organization. I don't want to say any more than that. And one of the things that we talked about is, he's going to have a happy ending. You know, he blew the whistle, and there's going to be really great, significant changes, and things are going well for him. He had to retire sooner than he wanted to, and he had a lot of things happen to him that were not a lot of fun. but he's going to have a happy outcome. I know Ross, I know all of us have had to stand up at times for things that we knew weren't right, and we had to pay a price. And that's it. Sometimes, it works out really great, and sometimes it doesn't. But it's about, for me, standing in truth and doing the right thing.
Elena?
Sorry.
Hello?
Children are being loud in the background today.
No, you're fine.
But she's deeply thinking. Deeply thinking.
Yeah, she's in deep thought about that one. I know. Good job,
thought.
Rock.
Sorry. Yes. Chaos ensues in this household. So, from children in the background. So, no, I think that, yeah, that whenever, you do have to identify, the devils and the angels that you're working with, and, choose to see where you're going to line up on that, that's part of the leadership decision. That's why you're entrusted with the position that you're in, is that you're making those decisions and that your team can trust you to make those decisions.
Yeah. It's like getting to the angels, that it says in the book, she decided that, Mother Teresa decided that the good the money could do in serving more of the poorest of the poor outweighed the character of its source.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was an interesting way that they put that. She accepted charity from the devils to get to the angels. So it's, go ahead.
Well, and later on, I think this is an important point. I just want to bring this in, that her line was not letting them use her as an endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she, would use the money, but in offering that money, they wanted endorsement. She would not take it. But that was
her line. She wouldn't even do endorsements for people who volunteered.
Right.
A letter of recommendations and things like that. She wouldn't even offer that to anyone because she felt that was a personal thing for them in their choice to serve. They were making those choices, and it's not a matter. I'm not looking for any accolades. Like, well, I've been there helping Mother Teresa. It's like, okay, we're moving on. it was a matter of what you gained from those experiences with those people in seeking to be a servant. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting.
One of the sentences here that I really love, and I think it's a way to remain humble, to stay in the game, says, Mother Teresa never set out to change the world, just to help the person in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember that, I think it makes it easier to hold that line.
And it really explains why this thing, why her charity is so large, because everyone is basically hopefully being in the moment and being present with that person that's in front of them.
Under choices, we'll walk through the choices part here and kind of dance
mm-hmm.
with that. So she says in the book here, as a leader, you can approach ethical dilemmas by answering several questions. First, who are your angels and what is your goal? So that could be a really good exercise for everybody, kind of think about who are those angels in your life. Second, what is your guiding principle on the issue at hand? And getting really clear on that. And she said, she often was quoted as saying, if you judge people, you have no time to love them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow,
that was great. Yeah,
and then finally, where in your value set do you draw the line? And, kind of weigh that as kind of your litmus test.
Yeah, really good. Let's do it together. So it's just really taking those different aspects, and I think it's something, there's a lot of self-inquiry that could be very helpful with each of those things. And kind of looking at my life, both personally and and professionally, with the way that you're interacting with people, and looking at what would be my bottom line. I mean, I think something like that could be constantly changing, depending on circumstances and what's happening with that. But yet, there's still going to be something that's just a line I won't cross. And there's a lot of integrity with that. So I just got a new puppy, and it's interesting to see the way of guiding a dog in what's acceptable and not acceptable, and how that really can roll over to human discipline and human interaction with people. I think it's pretty interesting. It's like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, and a puppy's ethics, you know, it's like, I can pretty much do whatever I want. That's my ethical.
Caesar would be like, you know, well, though I was watching an episode on YouTube where he was actually working with Jerry Seinfeld, and Jerry had two of his dogs. One was very dominant, the other one was very docile. And what Caesar was able to do was to say Jerry needed to be the leader. He needed to be the alpha.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? Exactly. And so as soon as Caesar showed the dominant dog how to be able to come from a place of like, because he said dogs are very easy. They want to please you. So the dog being dominant thought he was like, there wasn't anybody being the alpha, so he was going to take that on. So it was very interesting, you know, seeing how it was just a matter of standing a certain way, having a certain mindset in how you do things, and being very quiet. And that's one thing that Jerry said. He just said he had come from a household where you yelled at the dog if they didn't do what you wanted them to do. Instead of being in this place of just like, nope, that's not acceptable. That's not happening. We're not doing that. You know, that's my line right there.
Right. You can feel, you know, authentic power. You can feel love. And when you know, when you're yelling, you've probably lost it, right? And you're probably not in your true power. And, you know, and that just kind of throws everybody off energetically. So I'm going to give all three of you a warning here. So I'm going to ask you, you know, when you come up against an ethical decision, something that you're, you know, oh, my goodness, it kind of throws you around. What do I do? Maybe what are some of the techniques or how do you come at it? And so for me, what I do is I look at, how will I feel about myself a year from now or next week about this decision and the action that I'm taking? And one thing that I always think of, what if what I did, what I said, what everybody in the world would know? And how would I feel about that, knowing that? And assuming that that's a possibility, I think in the world today, anything you do or say is very likely to be able to be out to the entire world. So just knowing that and slowing down the volley as much as I can and taking the time. One thing I always say, I need to have a cup of tea on this, or I need to pray about this, right? That not, most decisions don't have to be made. If somebody's trying to make you make a decision really fast, there's probably some agenda there. So sometimes you need to slow down the volley and ask a few more questions, you know, and really be present with it and ask for, you know, guidance from friends, from wisdom people, you know, and take the time to feel good about your decision. And then, you know, like you know, all of you have said, reserve the right to, I have new information, I can make a new decision. All right, batter up.
Well, when you're saying that, what came up for me was the power of three. And somewhere I read in Chinese business practices that they would always encourage people, like you're saying, if you've got this really thing that you need to make a decision about, you know, taking the time to be able to do it, you know, whether it was three minutes, 3 days, you know, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 months. There is something about the power of three that really helps you to be in a place of having a cognitive way of being able to walk through it, depending on what the levity was of it, and being able to feel confident and coming from a heart space, you know, when you finally make a decision. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Alana.
Tell me the question again.
When you're butt up against making a decision that you may feel kind of about the ethics, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of the tools you use or steps that you take?
Well, I have this really great life coach. Her name is Amy Frost. And so I go to her and I talk to her.
Good answer. Correct answer.
Yes. And then I also, you know, I really do reflect it. You know, my grandfather was very influential in my life. And, you know, I spent many hours listening to him talk, working next to him as he did business. I just hear his voice in my head anytime something like that is going through, you know, something going down and looking at things from his, you know, truly his perspective and seeing what he would think. What that is, and drawing on that wisdom—that's a big one for me. And then, of course, you know, talking with my spouse, you know, talking with my business partners, you know, getting the, but also just really listening to what's going on inside of me. And if I'm having fear around a decision, or if I'm having, you know, what are the feelings I'm having around this decision, and why, and what are the risks? And like you said, can I, you know, what's the, you know, can I live with this decision tomorrow? Can I live with it, you know, next week? You know, is this, what are the things that, I also try to look at things that maybe I can't see myself, and then try to find, you know, somebody else. And I do a lot of research, you know, I'll just do a lot of research and get a lot of opinions and really try to listen to myself and go with my gut on what I really think needs to happen. That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Ross?
Great to have that mentor, your grandfather. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's very good.
How about you, Ross?
Well, I thought the grandfather comment is so true in the sense that, again, I go back to the Army. When you're a young soldier and you follow ethical leadership, you remember that, and it's embedded in your DNA when you're promoted later to a, you would ask yourself, what would General Smith do? What would Colonel Jones do? What would, you know, my company commander, Captain Gahagan, what would he have done? And that becomes your guide light, because you'll know what the right answer is. And it's not based on what's easy, and it's not based on what others want you to do. But at the end of the day, if you're in that leadership role, you're paid to make those decisions. And you also have to have the realization that if things go south, something happens, people are not going to come to you and say, well, that makes sense because you listened to somebody else. They're going to want to know why you made that decision. So you got to be comfortable with the decision, with the ability to tweak it if you need to. So, you know, again, these things are not black and white. That's why they're so hard and they're ethical. You know, but, you know, doing the right thing is always the right thing.
Right.
And, as easy as that sounds, it's actually hard to do when you're in the fight and things are going on. But, yeah.
And people are trying to sway you with money or prestige or titles or whatever. And you have to be so clear in yourself and who I am and what I am, you're not swayed by that stuff.
Even like when a mistake is made and everyone is all upset about who caused the mistake, whereas I always take the stance of what is the impact of the mistake and who does it impact? And if we collectively are the reason, then we have to own it and make it right. And that's like a customer service thing. But that also goes with ethics. If you find out you're on the wrong ethical path, you have to make an adjustment, you know?
As soon as you can.
Yeah.
All right, Robin, you want to tie it together with a pretty bow?
Yeah, and I just want to, again, make a little comment about what Ross had said. You know, it's just so important that being able to embrace those choices and knowing that, you know, I can always move to the next moment and know that a different choice, you know, may be required. And conversations, I love Alana's advice too, is just like, you know, what did my elders, I mean, you know, look at Native Americans and how they would go to the highest councils to have a situation to where, you know, there was discussions about what needed to be to move forward. What would that look like? And doesn't necessarily have to just rest on your own shoulders. So, you know, take some time to be able to be reflective about that. And again, you know, who are my angels? Who are the people, you know, my devils that challenge me and have me looking in a different way? And realize, you know, what it's inside of me that's my angelic presence. And then things that I would consider my devils that can really help me to be able to be in a place of more harmony with myself and being able to step with more integrity as I move forward, knowing that those devils have served me in a way so I can be that much, much better in my angel self. I think
Woo-hoo.
That's a great way of being able to look at that. Yeah, yeah. So, well,
flow,
thank
Robin.
You, Ross, for joining us, and we appreciate that masculine perspective.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Always good to be having on that. And Lana, great to have you join us as well. missed you guys. You know, we've been off for a couple of weeks because everybody's been having our own little adventures.
Yeah.
So it's great for everybody to get back together again. So next week we'll be doing Chapter 3, and I think it's going to be great. You know, looking at, you know, wait, you know, then put your – it's about looking at the moment and then being able to pick your moments and have them be something that's very dynamic. So looking forward to that. So you guys have a great week. We thank you for our international audience, and you guys take care. We'll see you next week.
Ethically yours.
We hope
later.
You enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.